Hello, and welcome to this podcast from the Oxford Institute for Energy Studies.
Welcome to the latest Oxford Institute for Energy Studies podcast. My name is David Ledesma, and I'm chairman of the Natural Gas Programme at the Institute. I'm today joined by Gulmira Zrzeja, who's research associate at the OIES, to discuss the key messages that came from her recent paper, The Renewal of Turkey's Long-Term Contracts, Natural Gas Market Transition, or Business as Usual, that was published in September 2020. Gulmira, great to have you here. Welcome to this podcast. Now, Gulmira, before we start, you know, and before we go into the details of the current changes in the Turkish gas market, could you perhaps give us an overview of the structure of the market today in Turkey?
Actually, the market structure in Turkey is import. So BOTAŞ is a dominant player in the market, which imports almost like 90% of gas. BOTAŞ transferred some contracts to private sector as well, more than 10 years ago. So 7 private sectors importing gas from Russian Gazprom. It's domestic natural gas production. So before, many years ago, along with Turkish state company, which called Türk Petrolları, TİPA, along with that company, 13 private companies were also doing exploration works, but not anymore. It's only TEPA, and it's the wholesale market is quite liberalized. It's liquid. Transmission system, although according to the law, there's open access to transmission system, but the fact that it's monopoly of BOTAŞ, and then we have LNG and storage. In principle, again, according to the law, it's open to third parties, but a lot of restrictions put by BOTAŞ and actually third party access strictly restricted. And the distribution sector is quite also privatized. Private sector roles is great. So it's mainly private sector here, and the very competitive retail sector. Retail sector is also privatized, is quite liberalized, and it is quite competitive. So that's the structure of the market. But the thing is that the state has been the dominant player in the energy market in Turkey, and Turkey tried to change the situation with the law called Natural Gas Market Law number 4646, passed as early as 2001. But I have to say that since then, little has been changed.
Yeah, well, exactly. And you know, the dominance of the state there is obviously kind of so important. And I imagine the market faces a lot of challenges, but one of them is going to be, of course, COVID-19. So how has the COVID-19 affected the Turkish economy and the natural gas market?
Well, Turkey's energy sector has been severely impacted by COVID-19. The most affected months were April and May, when natural gas demand fell by more than 20%. That was in April, and more than by 24%, and that was in May. So I think the power generation sector suffered the most, with gas consumption falling by almost 46% in April and May. Demand for power decreased by 4.5% in first 5 months, and gas consumption in industry sector fell by 16%, but it little affected the residential sector. Here, gas demand fell only by 2%. But the country witnessed the rebound in June and July.
But, you know, some of the numbers you're talking about are huge, I have to say. But so has this impacted on Turkish trade and financial flows then?
Yeah, the pandemic has also had negative impact on Turkey's trade and financial flows. The economic downturn led to annual inflation rate accelerating from 11.39% to 12.62% in May, And the annualized surplus of 1.1% of the GDP in the fourth quarter of last year declined to 0.2% by the first quarter of 2020. And the current account was projected to have dropped further to an estimated deficit of 1.6% in the second quarter. So the economy was severely affected. But again, here also we saw a rebound in already June and July.
Now, specifically talking about moving on to the kind of contracts discussion, which is the fundamental kind of discussion in your fascinating paper, I have to say, you wrote that next year is the turning point for the Turkish natural gas market because of the expiration of the contracts. My question is Turkey ready for this important event, especially as it coincides with the pandemic?
Turkey 2021 been an important year for restructuring the country's domestic natural gas market, to some extent liberalizing it and bringing long-needed flexibility and competitiveness that the Turkish decision makers were referring to a lot. This would require changing the terms of LTCs to reflect supply-demand fundamentals to achieve a market price, because a high market price is the main challenge in the Turkish natural gas market. And this situation, as you correctly mentioned, created by the pandemic, coincided with the time when Turkey was making the necessary market preparations for the impending negotiations of those LTCs with its current suppliers. Well, the measures have been directed to structural changes in the market and its long-awaited liberalizations through freeing it from long-term contracts, oil-linked prices, take-or-pay obligations, and destination clauses. And the current market situation, again created by COVID-19, was the gas prices falling below $2 per MMBTU in the major European liquid hubs, and a surplus of both LNG and pipeline gas elsewhere in the world, I think will only accelerate this transition to a free, open, and transparent market.
Well, one hopes it does, But honestly, Gulmira, and I've been hearing the same argument about the Turkish market for many years. So why don't we talk about liberalisation in the Turkish gas market? You know, what is the progress of that liberalisation at the moment in Turkey?
In the last 19 years, the transition to an open market has been extremely slow, I have to say. Because the 2001 legal framework of NGML, the natural gas market law, has not been implemented and market opening objectives have not been achieved. So it was expected that legal unbundling would happen within the framework of a competitive, financially strong, stable and transparent natural gas market and ensure the establishment of independent natural gas market regulation and supervision. But again, this never happened. And it's impossible, we all know the Turkey's ambition to create a liquid hub, but it's impossible to create a liquid hub in a market which is not liberalized and dominated by a state-owned company which is able to control the market and keep out players that it does not like or might pose a threat to its position.
Yeah, that's interesting, isn't it? There's this wish for a hub but without the liberalization, but, surely, in order to change the terms and the contract market that we discussed earlier, liberalisation has to be inevitable. And I thought, when we've discussed before, there was a target to reduce BOTAŞ's share of the market to 20% of total gas consumption. So how is that progressing?
That's absolutely correct. Yes. So the market requires that BOTAŞ market share has to be reduced to 20% of total gas consumption. But another important issue in full liberalization of the market is ownership and unbundling of BOTAŞ, splitting BOTAŞ activity into different legal entities, each with its own accounts and third-party access. So according to the law, BOTAŞ import, wholesale, transport, storage, and distribution activities were supposed to be split into three legal entities by 2015, which never happened. And that also included transportation, LNG and storage operations, importation. So as we witnessed, this never happened. But BOTAŞ was required to tender at least 10% of its existing contractual obligations each year until it reached the 20% share. And that actually happened only twice. So both have released 10 BCM of the import contracts to private sector. And one of the reason, main reason why NGML was not fully implemented is that the government viewed potash as a strategic player and wanted to ensure supply security by implementing its existing contractual obligations, which provide long-term gas supplies.
That's interesting. So when we talked about the impact of COVID-19 earlier on, Gulmira, you know, we didn't really talk about supply security. You know, do you think that argument of supply security has now returned because of the COVID crisis, or do you think it's now supply security is no longer important?
Well, it's no longer that important than it was before, because there is no demand pressure anymore. Turkey's demand is not growing, first of all. It's actually declining. And we expect that, I mean, we did some projections in the paper as well. We expect that this year demand will further fall from 45 BCM in 2019 to around maybe something 42, 43 BCM given the pandemic situation and lockdown. And on the other hand, now potash, less so private companies, obviously private companies, they don't have access to all the infrastructures, but potash has now access to spot LNG supplies on a much cheaper and on a much affordable prices than the long-term gas contract prices. So there is not such a thing at the moment like supply securities.
Interesting. Well, I'm just returning to the kind of the market structure, if I may. There's a quote in your paper I found very interesting, which was Turkey has made itself ready for serious structural changes and perhaps a new market design. For that, structural institutional changes will also be needed, and a new market design will not work unless and until this happens. Could you perhaps expand on this really important point further?
Yes, first of all, Turkey has, speaking about the structural change or making itself ready to this for the negotiations of the impending contracts, but Turkey has, first of all, straightened its hands by expanding daily entry points and out capacity in its midstream infrastructure, including LNG regasification terminals. And historic low LNG prices have enabled Turkey to benefit from substituting a significant share of Russian gas in last year and first half of this year. So LNG obviously is one of the LNG imports is perhaps the strongest factor which matches the flexibility and competitiveness narrative that the Turkish decision makers have frequently referred to. And that will significantly play into Potash's hands and also the technical ability to import almost 90% of its total current gas consumption via spot LNG. So Turkey expanded its LNG receiving terminals capacity a lot, and it's continuing doing so. As a result of great divergence between Russian gas and spot LNG prices, Gazprom lost significant market share in Turkey to spot LNG, but also, of course, to increasing imports of Shah Deniz 2 gas, which started flowing into the country in July 2018. So Russia was unable or perhaps unwilling to compete with the price of LNG sourced from the US and elsewhere. And this is despite the existence of three pipelines, Blue Stream, Turkish Stream 1 and 2, with a capacity of 48 BCM a year.
Interesting. But okay, so let's go move back in our discussion to the specific contract renegotiations. You know, what is Potash's bargaining leverage in negotiations with his suppliers, do you think?
Well, again, the expansion of infrastructure capacity gives it a lot of leverage in negotiations, but also demand fall. No demand pressure, as there's no demand pressure for Botosh at the moment as a result of bringing the share of natural gas in power generation down significantly, and the ability to replace imported gas with domestically produced energy, such as wind, solar, hydro, lignite, and coal. For instance, in 2020, Turkey's gas demands, like projected to grow modestly or stagnated relative to 2019, but also spot LNG was the option of choice this winter as Turkey significantly increased its imports. And it's most likely that LNG will cover the growth of demand even in off-peak seasons, because usually it was covering LNG was imported into the country during the high-peak seasons, but now the situation is changing. All these factors will play into Botosh's hands in the negotiations, and Botosh is going to take a very, very assertive position, like take it or leave it, the negotiation, you know, tactics with the current suppliers.
Okay, but so how does this affect, therefore, the market position of those suppliers? You know, which exporter of gas to Turkey do you think will be most affected?
Well, obviously it's Gazprom. It's Gazprom, because Gazprom has already lost the 35% of market share in Turkey. And this is it was actually financially very painful, because it's first of all financial losses, and financial losses was enormous for Gazprom, because Turkey is its highest premium market in Europe and it's most profitable. So what is also certain is that contractual decoupling from oil prices will inevitably bring imported gas prices down significantly, I think. And given the current low European hub prices, there is no doubt that this will be obviously, I think, an unwelcome development for the majority of the sellers of gas to Turkey, and first of all for Gazprom. So for them, accepting Turkey's condition of price decoupling and bringing take-or-pay commitments down from the current 80% to around somewhat to maybe 50-60% should mean significant financial losses. And again, that will first of all affect the Gazprom position in the market and Gazprom financial situation.
But what about the fate of the private sector importers? You know, can they access import-export infrastructure that you were talking about earlier on?
Yeah, the private sector importers' position is different. It's different than that of Botosh, and because these companies are not as strong as Botosh, it's clear that they do not have as strong relationship with Gazprom as Botosh has. So the first and most important reason is that these companies are operating in a monopolistic market. We should not forget that. So they do not enjoy the benefits of access to cheap spot LNG, for instance, or price subsidization, or free and open domestic market access, a diverse import portfolio and access to international pipelines as well as LNG terminals. So although three of the seven private importers, Bosphorus, Enerco and Shell, they have already received spot LNG import license and can legally import spot LNG at much lower than Gazprom LTC prices, this has not happened thus far due to Botosh restrictions, because Botosh doesn't allow them to access the infrastructure. And this is the contradiction at the heart of the whole price situation here. And just one more thing, because they absolutely fail to to fulfill their contractual obligations. And out of 10 BCM, aggregated 10 BCM, they managed to offtake only 1.3 BCM, which is only, you know, less than 10% of the contractual volume. So they will face severe fines for take or pay. In accordance with the take-or-pay obligations.
You started talking about pricing, so I'd like to move to pricing structures, if I may now. You know, if LNG can be bought on a European hub price basis, you know, you mentioned TTF in your paper, you know, will the drive of European prices pricing through the whole of the Turkish market, you know, that's going to bring prices down. Isn't that good for the government?
Well, yes, it is. But then we have to see whether it's possible, first of all. This has arguably already begun, as can be seen in the high level of spot gas price indexation in short-term spot LNG contracts. Well, given BOTAŞ dominance, subsidies to domestic customers, and no workable take-or-pay and third-party access, it's not possible to achieve any kind of hub market price in Turkey. The alternative option to achieve this is through links to market hubs in Europe could be possible. But for that to happen, it would need to be credible that BOTAŞ would refuse to purchase any pipeline gas at any price above TTF. So as long as it can obtain all of its gas needs through LNG at that price. Technically, this is possible. As I said, at the moment, BOTAŞ is capable to import 90% of gas consumption of the countries via spot LNG. And although this has happened with the TTF-related price for LNG, it's highly unlikely that it can act to force European market prices to be adopted for the whole of the Turkish market.
But you do mention, Gomir, and you suggest the possibility of maybe, you know, Europe to Turkey reverse flowing the pipes that currently go Turkey to Europe, to Europe to Turkey, you know, which could force the gas suppliers to accept European hub prices in long-term contracts. Is that likely to happen?
Well, that's correct. The other option is for pipeline connections to be created, for instance, reverse flows on the Malkuçlar Straja 2 pipeline, Turkey-Greece pipeline, TANAP and TurkStream pipeline. Technically, this is possible, which would allow Turkish buyers to access pipeline gas from the rest of Europe at hub prices. Right, so that would force pipeline gas suppliers to accept European hub prices for their gas in long-term contracts, but probably only after a major legal contractual fight, as there was in Europe. Right, we've seen it in Europe already.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, you know, and you know, it was a difficult time in Europe. I remember going through that. Well, look, you know, Gomera, we're coming to the end of this podcast, but. As many of our listeners know, I always like to end the podcast by trying to look forward. And, you know, you say in the conclusion of your paper, the government, stroke BOTAŞ, does not want to liberalise the gas market, but it wants the benefit of market liberalisation. And you also say, of course, these aims cannot be reconciled. So if this is the case, are we going to see change in Turkey? And how do you think the future is going to look?
Well, I think we are going to see some changes in the Turkish natural gas market. And given the current Turkish natural gas conditions, real liberalization can only be achieved by implementation of the provisions of NGML, and market prices can be achieved via this route. Although the government is under time pressure to achieve these objectives before the LTCs expire, because it's 16 BCM expire already next year, by the end of next year, it will not be possible to fully liberalize the market in the short term. So BOTAŞ may conclude a short-term contract with market prices with Gazprom and Shah Deniz 1 next year, using its access to cheaper LNG as a trump card, as a bargaining chip. But it will have to fully liberalize the market gradually by the end of 2020s, when all the LTCs with pipeline supplies expire. Leaving aside political and strategic considerations, and driven by pure economic logic.
Yeah, that's kind of quite a theoretical challenge. I agree with you when you say it's driven by pure economic logic, but politics always rules these things. Is it realistic that this liberalization is actually going to happen?
I think it's realistic because apart from all the these technical elements that they need, the Turkish government also needs a political will. And I think the timing is just perfect for that. And I think according to the Turkish official rhetoric, this has to happen. And I think that the Turkish government and the market is ready for that.
Well, Gulmir, you know, fascinating as always. I love talking about the Turkish market because, you know, there's such a huge potential there for change. And, you know, but I think the message I'm getting is we're going to have to wait, but hopefully not wait too long. Thank you very much for time. I really enjoyed our conversation today that builds on the messages from your recently published paper, The Renewal of Turkey's Long-Term Contracts, Natural Gas Market Transition, or Business as Usual. I hope you have all enjoyed listening to the podcast, and thank you and goodbye to everyone.
Thank you for listening to this podcast from the Oxford Institute for Energy Studies. You can find other podcasts, as well as all our written research, on our website at www.oxfordenergy.org. If you would like more details about our oil, gas, electricity or China programmes, then please contact us at information@oxfordenergy.org.